You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Thursday, 16 October. We've got UK GDP data later today, expected 1.3%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Viv Govender, Rand Swiss. Results from ASML and LVMH, the latter sending all of the world's luxury stocks higher. Sarah Nicholson from Just Money, their Money and Me survey. How are we earning and spending and saving? And then we're chatting with Standard Bank Group on their informal township economy report. Almost a trillion Rand in business activity, but most of it not registered. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. SANRAL still wants to collect your eToll debt despite government paying all of SANRAL's eToll-related debts. Business Day, SA Stone Fruit gained ground in China after historic trade deal. Trade protocol opens the Asian giant's market to five locally grown fruits. Morning markets, US was green, S&P 0.4% higher and Nasdaq up 0.7%. The East, mostly red, Sydney the exception, 0.8% into the green. Tokyo's down just over 1%, Hong Kong is down just over 0.5%, and Tencent down 1.1%. Commodities, all green. Gold futures, 4,246. Brent, 62.41. Platinum, 1,698. Palladium, 1,602. The Rand is 17.34. Bitcoin, 111,500. And top 40 opening call, red open, but 50 points or 0.05% lower.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
I'm chatting with Viv Govender. You find him, of course, Rand Swiss. Viv, appreciate the time. Some offshore results coming through. The big one, perhaps, ASML. I mean, this is part of that AI boom. They've, of course, got the extreme ultraviolet lithograph machines. No one else makes them. And that really kicked up, highest in 7 quarters. It was a good set of numbers for them after the CEO was maybe a little downbeat just a quarter ago.
Yes, it is. And look, ASML is the only ones that make it. I mean, literally the only people in the entire world with the ability to do this thing. And I mean, like, not like nobody else is trying this. It's like China can't get this level. And it's an incredible company. And, you know, to a certain extent, you just wonder why it's so underpriced, quite frankly, even with the 35 P ratio. I always wondered, like, if some of the companies like TSMC and ASML were run by greedy Americans, maybe they'd have bigger profit margins because they'd be more willing to kind of squeeze the consumer. But yeah, right, the results are good. But the share price has also been up significantly. Yeah. You know, I mean, in the last, you know, say year to date, basically, it's up about 45%.
Yeah.
There was no dip recently, just before the results came up. But the market, like you said, looked at it reasonably positively today.
And there was, I mean, there was reports that there was weaker sales into China. I get all of that. But ultimately, to your point, it's not like you can hope. It's this. If you want to make advanced chips, you've got to phone ASML one day or the other. There's no two ways around it.
Yeah, look, I mean, eventually the Chinese will crack this. They're smart. They have the experience, whatnot. It will eventually happen. But right now, at this time, when AI companies like NVIDIA are worth more than the entire developed market stock exchanges on their own, you're amazed that, you know, ASML, basically, which is has a far stronger moat than NVIDIA. I mean, NVIDIA's moat is not that strong compared to ASML's. And even the TSMC, we see, like, the Chinese able to replicate what TSMC does to a certain extent with, you know, machines that they've come to get from ASML. This company is literally the one company that you say is irreplaceable in the world at the moment. And yeah, you would think that they'd be able to extract a higher profit margin from their monopoly, but they just don't seem to.
Yeah, to your point, they're Dutch. Maybe they're, I don't know, eating too much cheese and wandering down around the canals. Moving slightly from Amsterdam, France, LVMH results were out. Now, when I looked at the results, I thought, I mean, yes, they got sales growth, all of 1%, but it was against the expectation. And I mean, they had a massive day. I mean, even Richemont was up some 5% on the local exchange. The sense is that maybe luxuries, maybe not booming, but stopped falling, maybe is the better point.
Exactly. And this is kind of the opposite of what happened with ASML, where it was a good year and the market kind of like still rewarded them to a certain extent. LVMH, it's been a bad year so far. I mean, from their peak, you know, back in January till now, they're down significantly, even with the rise today. So it was a case of the market saying, okay, the results are out. Yes, they are down, but they are not down or weak as much as we thought they were. And that's why we're seeing a bit of a rally coming through today, up 11% or 12% almost.
My sense is, though, I mean, particularly, I mean, America is the market. A lot of their market is, of course, also Asia. I look at a global economy and I wonder who's buying this high-end luxury. I suppose it's the old story that, you know, when you're wealthy, you lose a bit, you're still wealthy and can afford stuff that most of us only dream about.
I think it's a bit different from that, because what I would say to you is this: look at the stock market. I mean, mm-hmm. the S&P 500 today, look at the gold price, look at, you know, a number of different assets out there. If you were an asset owner, you're making a lot of money at the moment. You know, you're feeling okay. Wealthier. The S&P 500 at the moment is at 6,700, you know what I mean? Because it's up quite nicely from the lows we had a few months ago, all-time highs, even local markets. I mean, mm-hmm. if you were one of the wealthier people in South Africa, you'd be looking around and saying, okay, my wealth is primarily these assets that are now up at all-time highs. I feel a bit wealthier. And, you know, who's buying LVMH products? It's not the man on the street. It is usually people that have these assets. So I think going forward, if we do see like the AI expected growth rates, I mean, people are talking about 5-6%, you know, GDP per capita growth rates in the next couple of years. That's not going to go to the general population. That's going to be concentrated among certain groups, generally groups that own assets like shares. And those guys are going to be buying the LVMHs and the rich ones of the world.
Yeah, that's actually a great point. Your portfolio is at all-time highs. You feel rich. You feel confident. You go and spend some money. And if you're rich, you don't even have to sell shares to do that. We leave it there. Viv Govender, Rand Swiss, always appreciate the time.
And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. There's LVMH results. I mean, the results weren't massive, but they were moving in a different direction. They've been slipping. This was a step higher, and the market loved it. Are you bullish? Luxury stocks? Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation-beating returns. Let your money keep working with Standard Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Sarah Nicholson, Just Money. Sarah, appreciate the early morning. You've got your inaugural Money and Me survey published yesterday. The two top points, and they really stood out for me. The desire to grow income, 61% of respondents were saying they struggle every month financially. And then on the other side, 36% have a side hustle. I suppose those two are directly linked to a degree. It is tough out there, and we need to take on that second source of income to make it work every month.
Absolutely. And I was just listening to your previous interview as well. We're talking about people that are on the street and, you know, the general population that are really having to look at how they can start earning more. Mm-hmm. But yes, we did release our survey yesterday. We had about 5,500 people responding to it. And we asked a number of questions from earning, borrowing, saving. How do they feel about their income protecting? How does trust play a role in your financial mm-hmm. choices? Also about cryptocurrency and also what are the scams that are taking place? And definitely what we saw is side hustles are very popular. Buying and selling online is definitely one of the most popular ones. And what is interesting, it is this slightly younger group that is really interested in this. There is that need to earn more that is coming across, definitely. And it also speaks to how South Africans are really resilient, even though the environment out there is really challenging.
Yeah, I take your point on that. Absolutely. That sense of resilience from the South African consumer. And the one point that to a degree sort of indicates that is a low level of loyalty. 71% of respondents say, you know what, it's about special offers and price rather than loyalty to a brand. Some of the brands obviously realize that, but it does show you that we will shop around to find the best bang for buck.
Definitely. I call it a national sport, bargain hunting in South Africa. And really, it is often driven by necessity. So customers are looking to go and look for the best deal, which mm-hmm. does mean that often that brand loyalty is not there as much. You will find this a little bit more prevalent in the slightly younger generation, mm-hmm. whereas those that are slightly older and earning more are more likely to actually have a loyal shop that they would go to. But again, this, as you said, it's very much driven by the necessity and prioritizing basics. What was really interesting is that if you had to give people an additional 1,000 rand.
Yeah.
75% of women said, and 67% of men said they would actually go and spend it on groceries.
Wow.
So that really does underscore that struggle to meet the basic needs and impacts that loyalty. What was also interesting and a concerning trend is that gambling is quite popular. We do know that retail specials are the most popular way to stretch your money, but we did see that with men, they are twice as likely as women to actually choose gambling. Let's say if they were looking for restaurant deals, a man would choose to gamble versus go and find a better restaurant to go to.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw that the lowest income earners are about four times more likely to take on or try out gambling. So there's potentially an impression or a sense that this is a way to earn additional money. But of course, it does come at a very high risk.
Yeah, the gambling, these online gamblers, I think they're a blight on our society. You mentioned scams and the number, and and I'll quote the report, a shocking 50% of respondents have been scammed. I mean, it's a terrifying number. A quarter of them are social media scams. But I mean, I suppose that's the scams are getting smarter. But I suppose there's a vulnerability as well. You kind of want to believe, you're kind of hoping it's true.
Yeah, it was a very scary statistic to see. I mean, 50% is a massive number of people. And if you actually had to look at what that costs people, let's say it was 1,000 rand per person, and about 50% of the base, you look of the population, it's about 4 billion rands worth of money that has been lost to scammers. So it is a huge amount. And I think as we're heading into the festive season, it's really important that people are aware of this. And we see that a lot of the scams are taking place with the slightly older generation as well. A lot of it is taking place with online scams, especially around social media. So I think it just speaks to that necessity of just understanding and knowing what type of scams are out there. And it speaks to the desperation of many people. You know, there's the pressure of money. And if someone is offering a fairly easy way to potentially do that, you might fall for it, or something looks really legit and you fall for it. So it just pays to be really aware. And of course, these scams increase during the festive season. So please just pay attention.
I say don't get scammed. It's easy for me to say it. It's harder for it in reality. I get that. A last question around saving, which I suppose reading through the report and coming to the saving part didn't surprise me, which is only 9% of people are managing to save 10% or more of their income, which I suppose it sort of almost illustrates the report in its entirety, in the sense that it shows that the money is just not there, and therefore we are not able to save, and that has longer term implications. Retirement one day.
Absolutely. I mean, like you said, it's about 42% of people are actually falling in that borrowing cycle, which means there isn't additional money to put aside. It also speaks to the fact that there's a heavy support burden, with about 43% of individuals actually having to support four or more people with their income. And this is increasing around the age of 35 to 44. So not only is, you know, the economy having to really rely on loans, but there's also a pressure to look after various family members.
Yeah.
So it makes saving incredibly, incredibly challenging. But again, it is important, and we do need to stress that it is something that you need to consider and try and find a way to do.
Yeah, but I take your point. It's the pressure on the wider family that needs support. And that does make it even harder. We'll leave it there. That's Sarah Nicholson. Just Money. Appreciate the early morning. Give you money, smoother returns for Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Alexani Masamani, Head of Enterprise and Supplier Development at Business and Commercial Banking South Africa for the Standard Bank Group. Now, Alexani, appreciate the time today. You've just recently published the data on your inaugural Township Informal Economy Report. A lot of really, really fascinating data. The key point is the size. It's almost a trillion rand. And for comparison, the South African economy is only a little over 7 trillion. The informal township economy is huge.
Thanks, Simon. It is huge. It's a huge economy, and it's a huge economy that contributes to, you know, economic growth and economic development. So our research tells us, or this report tells us, that of the 250 businesses that we surveyed, they collectively created over 7,500 jobs. And that really shows the impacts that these businesses that operate within the informal economy have in terms of job creation. Our report also showed that 80% of the businesses that are operating within the informal economy are not registered for tax purposes, which is quite, you know, it's a contradiction when you also look at the job creation stats that came out of the report as well. So it's quite an insightful report with quite a few interesting data points.
That unregistered, I mean, you know, SARS might have something to say for it, but there's a bigger issue to it, because I would imagine restricts, if not completely, it makes, for example, finance, more formal markets, simply unavailable to this economy.
Yeah, definitely. You know, the impact of being unregistered means typically when you have a funding need, you might not be able to get access to your traditional forms of funding. And it also means in some instances, you might miss out on, you know, those market access opportunities with some of your bigger corporates. You might miss out on supply chain opportunities outside of the country in which you operate within as well. So it really does have a ripple effect on the sustainability and growth of a business.
Do you get any idea of the size of some of these businesses? Because I think a lot of folks, when they think informal township economy, they're thinking maybe a little Shisanama or, you know, someone selling fruit and veg. But the way you're talking suggests actually perhaps bigger businesses, albeit informal.
Yeah. So we were quite specific when we commissioned this report. The businesses that we looked at had a turnover of between 100,000 and 50 million rand.
Oh, wow.
So it's quite a diverse range of businesses from a turnover perspective. Majority of them were sitting within that 100,000 to 500,000 range turnover. But we had quite a few as well that were turning over in the millions as well. And when you start also looking at the unregistered component of that as well, it says there is a, I guess, a missing economy that we're probably not seeing or accounting for appropriately.
Absolutely get your point on that. And that then comes back to your point around the number of people that they employ. If we could formalize without sort of, you know, disrupting what's happening there, I mean, this is already a driver of jobs. It could be a significantly larger driver of jobs, I suspect.
Definitely a significantly larger provider of jobs. And also you could look at, you know, ensuring that the people that have those jobs have the right skills as well. Then it helps you in terms of planning, what type of skills do we consider when we look at the future? What type of skills do we consider as well when we look at our current, you know, economic activity and what's happening in the different economic sectors in which we operate within?
Are we also, I mean, we're talking informal, but are these mostly in the more sort of informal environment? And I'm thinking maybe operating out of a home, maybe operating out of a spare room or something, rather than maybe in a shopping center or more formal. Are they often informal environments as well from which they operate?
Yeah, so most of them, about 49% of the businesses we spoke to, were operating out of a residential house. We had about 11% operating within a commercial building, 8% within an industrial site, and about 6% within an office park. So there is about a quarter of that cohort which operates in more formal structures. The rest was in their residential premises or on the street. And those ones that were operating, you know, within the streets environment, typically faced challenges in that they were operating in saturated markets. Competition is high. They were selling similar goods or services. Yeah,
that's a great point, because I think often we think an informal economy, the township economy, we think of, I don't know, almost a desert, you know, small. It's patently not. It's almost a trillion rand. The flip side is it's highly competitive and giving huge choice to consumers, I imagine, in the townships to their benefit, to the consumer's benefit.
Yeah, it's extremely competitive. And that is why we typically say, you know, incorporating non-financial support, looking at business development for these SMEs is very critical, because they need support in terms of, how do I price my goods? How do I market my goods? How do I craft a clear value proposition that will actually entice people to want to purchase goods or services from me as a business?
A last question is around payment. There's a big shift away from cash. We've got PayShap, we've got other digital channels for payment. Is this happening here, or is it still a predominantly a cash economy?
It is predominantly still cash heavy, but these businesses do want to use digital payments. About, I think, 56% of the businesses that we spoke to would prefer utilizing, you know, EFTs to make payments because they do recognize that it's safer. But they also would like to use, you know, your point of sale devices to receive payments because it's also a safer method for them. And also their customers are banked, so they do have cards. Yeah. And for them, it's also easier to just tap your card or insert your card into a device.
We'll leave it there. It's Nalinzani Masamani, Head of Enterprise Supply Development, Business and Commercial Banking SA for the Standard Bank Group. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. We were chatting with Dwayne Cable yesterday from 91, talking the risks in the local income portfolios as those returns slip lower. It was a point where you could get sort of equity-like return in the income market, but of course that has now faded away. We asked if you were struggling to get the returns you need from a conservative portfolio. Almost half said yes, a third said doing all right, the rest said some equity is helping. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Local ETP industry hits $250 billion in assets.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.